Employment's been getting a lot of visibility in the press lately, with a lot of attention being paid to the disparity between employees without disabilities and employees with disabilities, specifically intellectual developmental disabilities. So I wanted to go to the source and really figure out what's out there to help employers navigate this maze of making sure they're not running afoul of the American with Disabilities Act. Today's guest is the Director of Training with the Job Accommodation Network, Tracy DeFreitas, and she's been with JAN for almost 30 years. We have a great conversation. About halfway, three quarters of the way through, what I thought was going to be a softball about service animals. And I was blown away that there's a difference in how service and emotional support animals are addressed and considered between Title I, Title II, and Title III of the ADA. I had no idea. We had a really great conversation around the differences with how Title I and Title II and Title III treat service animals and emotional support animals. Really, really eye-opening. The Job Accommodation Network can be a phenomenal resource. I've said it a couple times during this episode. Their website is huge. There's just so much information on that website. I could spend hours or days, you know, looking through it and really just soaking it all in. I hope you, and I believe you're going to get a lot of information from this, whether you're an individual with a disability who's looking for a job, a parent of an individual with a disability, and you're worried about them working, or an employer who wants to be more inclusive and more welcoming to those with disabilities. Welcome to the ABCs of Disability Planning Podcast. My name is Eric Jorgensen. I'm your host. I started the ABCs of Disability Planning Podcast to introduce you to organizations and individuals around the country that are doing amazing things for people with disabilities. I want to really raise awareness and help you understand and maybe look at things a different way for how you can use what's out there to make your life better, to really give you that freedom you've been looking for. Let's dive in. Welcome, everybody. Today, I should have asked you before I hit record. Today, I have with me Tracy DeFreitas. Did I say your last name?
Yes, you got it right.
With the Job Accommodation Network, we're going to talk today about what JAN does and how they help people. And Tracy, I believe JAN primarily focuses working with employers, correct? It's although their individuals can get information from the website, it's really heavily focused on employers, correct?
Yeah, you're right. I'd say that we are here as a service for anyone who has questions about job accommodation solutions and Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act. But, you know, our goal is to certainly work directly with employers who are making those changes in the work environment. So whereas we serve everyone who has questions, employers are certainly a sort of a main focus for us in terms of our audience.
And I think that does a good overview of what you guys, what Job Accommodation Network is. I mean, it's in your name, right? But how did you start? How did JAN get their start? What led to that? Because you were sharing before we hit record that you've been with them for almost 30 years.
Yeah, which,
and they've been around for, that means they've been around for a very long time.
Even longer, exactly. So, you know, just to tell you a little bit about our service. So it's the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN. Most people know us as JAN. We are a free national consulting service that provides confidential, practical guidance on job accommodation solutions and technical assistance on Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA. This service actually began as a national project that was designed to enable employers across the U.S. to share information about the accommodations they were making for individuals with disabilities in the workplace. It's sort of, the idea was to create a way for employers to connect and share their experiences in providing accommodations. The thinking was that if employers could share their accommodation solutions, their situations with each other, then ultimately the more employers would be likely to hire and retain individuals with disabilities. So that shared experience plans would help other employers make accommodations and hire more people with disabilities. Of course, the service sort of adapted over time to where accommodations made by employers can be documented and shared, and where employers could ultimately call and confidentially discuss their experiences with consultants, experienced consultants, to, you know, talk about the accommodations that they were providing, and also to get ideas, to talk about, you know, what are some other solutions that we might be able to consider. So it really did start out with that, you know, idea of working directly with employers, creating a resource where employers could connect, but then sort of evolved a little bit into, you know, working with, sharing information, talking with our consultants over time. Then sort of the scope of JAN services kind of organically broadened to assist individuals with disabilities, service providers, legal professionals, family members, and others who would have questions around accommodations and the ADA, ultimately the ADA. In its initial start, the ADA wasn't even in existence. So we've been around since 1983.
Wow.
So it's been quite a long time. So, you know, our core mission of assisting employers to make workplace accommodations, it remains paramount. It always has been, but we're there really for anyone who has questions. The project initially was conceived in, like I said, 1983, and it was conceived by industry members of what was then known as the President's Committee on the Employment of the Handicapped, which later became the President's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities. And then in 2001, actually, that is when the service was then funded by the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy, or ODAP, which is, you know, most people today know that we're funded through ODAP.
Okay.
We do operate as a nonprofit grant-funded service, actually through West Virginia University Research Corporation on behalf of West Virginia University. So ODAP grant funds us, and we operate out of West Virginia University.
Wow. Okay.
So it's an interesting history. You know, we've certainly evolved over time in terms of how we provide our service and to whom and how we do it, but we're all about accommodations.
No, that's really cool. I wrote down and underlined the word practical, because I feel like that's something that I worry that people don't take that into account, right? They just hear accommodation, and they're immediately off to the races about, oh, it's going to be too expensive. It's going to be too crazy. What, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, rip all my lights down and replace them with something else. And, you know, but the term practical, the word practical, I think would hopefully give people pause and say, okay, maybe it's not going to be that bad. Right. Can you give an example just really quick? I mean, we're going to do a deeper dive as we go in, but really quick, what a simple practical accommodation could be?
You think about it, you know, we use the word accommodation as it relates in this context to people with disabilities, but employers make adjustments, changes at work all the time for people, right? We just don't call them accommodations. So, you know, when somebody asks for schedule modification, you know, maybe it's something they don't ordinarily offer in under most circumstances, but now we have somebody who, for a disability-related reason, they're asking for that change so that it will enable them to come to work every day, perform their job duties. And so an employer makes what we then call an accommodation. So, you know, it's really, when you think about it, it's just about making some changes that will enable somebody to perform the work. It can be simple things, you know, schedule changes are obvious. You know, I think those are things employers can usually easily make. And it's something we're all familiar with, right? It's something that generally doesn't cost anything. It's just a simple change.
Right. So it's the same thing you would do for somebody without a disability. Let's say a single parent who needed to come in at 10 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock because exactly. They're, you know, because of school or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they could work later. They could do their shift and they would stay till 7 instead of 5 or whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
But to your point, the employer's not saying, well, I'm going to give you an accommodation. So it's almost like we're making it more onerous for people with disabilities by giving it that label.
It depends, because remember, there are some situations where an individual with a disability might ask for something that they wouldn't normally be entitled to or that an employer wouldn't normally do. And those are the instances where we might call it an accommodation. But in those other situations where it's something that's available to anyone, regardless of why you need it or why you ask for it, if that's just your policy and how you do it, then that's not an accommodation. That is just something an employer does and they should do for everyone. So it there are some subtle nuances and differences in terms of those modifications that are made and when they're considered an accommodation and when they're not.
And I would imagine that's probably I'm going to use the word in air quotes, typical misunderstanding, right? Where people, because I'm a layperson, so, and I'm getting twisted, you know, a little caught up with the language, and I can see how employers are going to err on the side of, I don't want to get sued. So maybe they don't hire people with disabilities or they don't promote them or what have you, for all really, and again, air quotes, good reasons. But the bottom line is managers and supervisors have these misperceptions of what you're going to have to do for somebody with a disability. Is that pretty accurate?
I think that can be true. Yeah, absolutely. For, you know, particularly for maybe managers and supervisors who don't realize they might have experience hiring or working with people with disabilities. Remember, you know, disabilities can be apparent and not. And, you know, sometimes we just don't realize and or have need to know that somebody has a disability. It's really about focusing on who's qualified, who's able to do the job, not so much focusing on the disability. You know, but for those people who don't have a lot of experience or don't realize that focus should be on the can do, what can I do? You know, maybe they just need a little bit more training, a little bit more understanding about what it takes to make certain changes or accommodations to enable people to perform job duties. I think that there can be some typical misunderstandings when it comes to providing accommodations or looking at what's required under the ADA. So for example, you know, maybe, you know, some people might think that the ADA forces employers to hire and retain unqualified individuals with disabilities, but that's not true, right? So under the law, you know, it's a matter of hiring an individual who maybe has a disability. They have to be qualified. They need to be able to perform the essential job duties with or without an accommodation. So at the end of the day, do they have the skills? Do they have the certifications, the education, any requirements you'd be looking for? And can they do the job? Because at the end of the day, it is about, can they do the job? The idea behind accommodation is just about maybe making a modification that would enable the person to do it. So maybe there are some barriers that are in the way because of the disability, because of the work-related circumstances, and it could just be some simple changes that could make a difference and that makes them qualified, because now with that accommodation, there's no question they can do the job. So, you know, it's certainly not about just, you know, applying the law or providing accommodations and assuming that employers are forced to hire people who can't do the work.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm trying to think how I want to phrase this. You know, it's, well, so let's assume, because I try to assume ignorance, not ill intent, right? I really try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and just say, especially smaller employers who maybe this is the first time they've hired somebody, they just don't know any better. Mm-hmm. So I really try not to say people are going out of their way to not comply with the ADA or what have you. Do you have any examples of some of the more common accommodations? You know, we said scheduling is pretty easy. You know, I would think, the other one that I would come to mind would be, and it was on the tip of my tongue, but you know, background noise, like I wear hearing aids. You know, so playing music real loud in a workspace, or maybe not real loud, but just having it in the background, it can sometimes make it really hard for me to hear what somebody's telling me, because the hearing aids are being drowned out by the whatever your Muzak or whatever it is. So yeah. I would imagine, unless there's a reason, it's, you know, maybe you can find a way to turn that down. I would imagine that would be an accommodation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's important to keep in mind is there's no comprehensive list of accommodations. We look at accommodations as being just about anything. It really kind of boils down to the situation, you know, what's needed, you know, what's going to make it so that that person can do the work or access benefits and privileges too, and what's going to be reasonable. So when we think about what's reasonable is what's plausible, what's possible to provide without it causing significant difficulty for the employer. And so to that end, accommodations can be anything. we've certainly over the years talked about or offered even some really sort of out of the box ideas. But, you know, it can be things like job restructuring. So that's a common accommodation. And what that means is where you might remove marginal job duties that are problematic. So those duties that the job really, they come with the job, but maybe they're not absolutely necessary for the position. It could be changing when or how essential functions are to be performed. We know that essential functions are not required to be removed from a position. However, it might be about changing how they're done. So, you know, for example, oftentimes we talk about lifting, you know, is a good example. You know, we often get hung up on whether someone can lift something. And I often talk about it as it's about moving it. It may not be lifting it from the floor up to something else, but it may be about getting it from point A to point B. So how can we do that? There are lots of ways that you can accommodate lifting restrictions. It may be as simple as just making sure that things are situated at a certain height so the item doesn't need to be picked up and moved. That doesn't cost anything. It's just a matter of rethinking the situation and looking at how things are done. It could be, you know, when we look at job restructuring, it could be things like communicating differently with people or supervising people differently. Sometimes it may be easier to communicate in email or in written context instead of face-to-face or in verbal ways. So maybe it's just sort of looking at doing things a little bit differently. There are a lot of common accommodations. And, you know, you mentioned the scheduling. We talked about that. And that could be anything from the hours worked or the time somebody works, you know, so it could be flexibility and getting hours in during parts of the day. It could be allowing additional unpaid breaks if that's necessary for somebody. It could also come down to modifying things like policies. It is something an employer might need to look at as far as modifying a policy for an individual with a disability. It doesn't mean you have to modify the policy for the entire organization, but it might mean making an adjustment when it's necessary due to a disability-related reason. And there can be lots of policies. It can be anything from allowing telework, for example, so changing where work is performed as an accommodation, or maybe modifying a dress code if for some reason someone needs a different type of uniform or maybe needs to wear different shoes because of a disability related reason, or even allowing somebody to wear a hat or sunglasses in the work environment. So if they might have some issues with lighting or sensory related issues. Access for emotional support animals and service animals in the work environment. That's modifying a no animals policy in the work environment.
Can we pause there for a second? So,
sure.
Tracy? Because there's a difference between an emotional support and a service animal, right?
Correct. Yes.
So which one is protected by the ADA?
So that's a good question. So there are different titles of the ADA, right? We have titles 1, 2, 3, and some others. But for what Jan does, we talk to people about Title 1 of the ADA, which is the employment provision of the law. Many people are often familiar with the requirements as it relates to service and emotional support animals under Titles 2 and 3 of the ADA, which are very different. Title 1 is related to employment, and it applies to private employers with 15 or more employees. When we look at Titles 2 and 3, we're looking at public access or access to state and local government type scenarios. The rules for service and emotional support animals are different under Titles 2 and 3. So, for example, there's a specific definition of service animal under the Title III rules, where it is an animal that is specifically trained to perform a service for that individual. The Title III rules actually exclude emotional support animals in terms of access in public accommodations. So going into restaurants, banks, stores, things like that. So they make a distinction under those titles. It's different under Title I. So in employment, in a job accommodation situation, if somebody requests to bring a service or an emotional support animal into the workplace, that's to be treated just like any other type of request for accommodation, meaning that the employer doesn't have to automatically allow access for the animal. They can treat it like any type of request for accommodation, go through the accommodation process, determine if the individual has a disability, what their limitations are, and why the animal is needed, and then ultimately decide if it's reasonable to allow access for the animal. And I say that whether it's a service animal or an emotional support animal. because there is no distinction under Title I as to which one has access or which one doesn't. So we really have to look at either animal, possibly, in the employment context. But it is ultimately up to the employer to decide if it's something that can be allowed as a reasonable accommodation.
Wow. Okay. And I would imagine that would open, just because I have a dog, that would open up to maybe more frequent breaks for, you know, because then you have to accommodate the animal as well.
Potentially. Yeah. In some cases. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I had no idea about that. Thank you.
Wow. And we offer a lot of resources on that topic because it's a tricky topic and it's one that you won't find a whole lot of information out there under Title I. You'll find a good bit under the Title II and III rules, but not so much under Title I. So if you were to go to the askjan.org website, askjan.org, there is some information there related to service and emotional support animals.
So in theory, and I'm not really looking for an answer, I'm just talking this out. In theory, you could own a restaurant and your maitre d' could use a seeing eye dog to help get people seated, but they don't necessarily have to accept people with an emotional support animal to actually eat at the restaurant.
In theory, correct. If you're following the Title III rules set by the Department of Justice for public access, that is correct. Now, if on the other hand, your maitre d' says, I need an emotional support animal, you might have to consider that as a Title I job accommodation.
Wow.
Provided it's something that's reasonable. And there, you know, there'd be a whole process you'd go through to kind of take a look at, is it okay to have the animal in that environment doing that type of work? So it can get a little bit complicated in some situations. But yeah, so that was a good example of kind of looking at it on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I like that. And then if you're working for Chef Ramsay, you can absolutely see why you need an emotional support animal.
True.
And then I was looking at your website. I love your website. You guys have got, I could spend like all day there. You guys have so much information and I'm a nerd. So that's, you know, but you have this searchable online accommodation resource, SOAR. And is that another place you could go in and type? You could type in there emotional support animal and it would pull stuff up for you?
It could. And that's one option on our site. I would, however, say I prefer, being a user of the JAN site myself, our A to Z section of our site.
Okay.
So we do have the SOAR option, but I like the A to Z. With the A to Z search, you can search by disability, limitations, work-related function, accommodations, and topics. So I like the topic section personally.
Okay.
The topic section is nice because if you're looking for something, for information about different types of accommodations, so let's say service animals, so you can go to that section of the site and look for service animals. If you were interested in information on reassignment or leave or other types of accommodation topics, that's a good place to start.
That's really cool. So again, not assuming ill intent on the part of an employer, but if you work for an employer and you said Title I only applies to, you know, 15 and more, but maybe you work for, you know, a financial advisor or an attorney where there's only six of you or five, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, and they want to accommodate you. This could be where you could go to the, you could do the work for them, right? Because oftentimes people aren't looking for you to add more to their plate.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go to Jan's website. You could search by topic and pull up a couple resources and diplomatically say, hey, I was just trying to think how I can help you make this more accommodating for myself and some other, maybe a future hire or whatever. Here's some things I found. I mean, is that something you see people do or?
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point, for any size employer, you know, so if you have an individual who is trying to work with that employer, whether it's because they want to request accommodations or they're just trying to assist that employer in becoming more educated or learning, you know, information about accommodations generally. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, it might be helpful to explain to the employer that JAN's a free and confidential service that's available to the employer and that we can provide individualized guidance on the accommodation process and accommodation related topics. And like you said, in a diplomatic way, I think, you know, we don't want to, you mentioned earlier, we don't want to put too much on people's plates. You know, employers already have a lot on their plate, right? So why not help? Why not provide the information that makes it easy? So if there's some way to get them practical ideas, information, resources, why not do that? So I think the key is to sort of let the employer know that Jan's a service that's free. It's confidential. I think that's a key too for some employers, that we're experienced and that we're available to help. Our motto is Ask Jan, we can help. So, and our website kind of says that for us too. I think it's quite extensive, like you mentioned, and it's a good place to go for anyone, honestly, who is looking for information about these types of topics. For a smaller employer who, you know, a lot of smaller employers don't have the benefit of HR services. Yep. And so they're not really sure where to begin. And whether it's an employer that has to comply with the law or doesn't, it, you know, we always talk about going beyond compliance, sort of that idea of accommodations make good sense. Yep. They make good sense for everybody. So, you know, whether it's you're looking to ADA or not, it's a good place to start just to get some information about what to do next. I think for individuals, if you're requesting an accommodation, it's always a good idea to go to the employer with information, to go with solutions. Don't just go with a problem. Come to them with some information to help get you started on that right path to accommodation. So, you know, that's certainly something that could be done. Offer accommodation solutions if you know them. If not, talk about collaborating together to explore them. And then, you know, also by giving the employer resources, it helps them know that you're trying to do part of that work too. You know, you're trying to look for information and you want to work together to brainstorm ideas. So I think it's always good to kind of start the process that way and to help, you know, give the employer the resources to move forward with.
Yeah, I mean, I learned that the hard way in the Navy, Tracy. It was just what you said, you know, come with solutions, not just a problem. The Navy, the people I worked with put it a little harsher than that I'm not going to repeat, but it gets the intent is there.
Yeah.
Don't come to me unless you have something, unless you're offering a solution, because otherwise, you know, why, what do you want me to do? Another way of looking at it is keep the monkey on your back. I'm not taking it from you, right?
Yeah.
and from having been in the Navy and having had people work for me, if you can come with several solutions or several different types of solutions or potential solutions, it makes it harder for somebody to say no.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, if there's, and you can kind of gamify it. You can say, well, here's this one. You know, they're never going to go for that one because it's too expensive. It's too outlandish, whatever. And you have this other one that you don't, you know, this other one that you're pretty sure they're not going to go for. Well, sandwich the one you really want in the middle, because 9 times out of 10 people take the middle choice anyway.
It's probably a smart tactic.
Yeah, I'm saying it, not Tracy, not Jan. Right. Jan's not endorsed this. It's just
it's a strategy, you know. And I think, and that is something that we do, is we offer strategies and we help you come up with strategies, because you just never really know. I mean, there are lots of employers out there who are willing to go well above and beyond. And so, yeah, maybe you would get that premier, you know, accommodation, and others who just don't have the capacity to do that. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for meeting in the middle. You know, I think that if it's possible to provide that accommodation that is going to ensure that person can be successful in their work, and also for an employer, you know, meet your business requirements, that's the goal. You know, we want both parties to be successful in what they're doing. So, you know, how can we negotiate? How can we work together? How can we meet in the middle to come up with solutions that are going to work?
What I believe you're going to find is like what happened with the curb cuts. You know, when they start putting curb cuts, and I think there's even a study about this out there somewhere, about how many other people benefited, not just people with wheelchairs, but people who are pushing baby strollers or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you make certain accommodations in your workspace. Let's say you widen the distance between desks or something. Well, now you make it easier when people are bringing office supplies in, or somebody with a wheelchair or an ambulatory device can get through pretty easily, but it also means if people are carrying things or something else, they're not worried about tripping. You know, there's other ways, and I'm obviously winging this, but I mean, I think I think more often than not, if you make an accommodation, you're going to find a trickle down effect of it helping more people than you originally thought.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that kind of comes back to that concept of universal design. You know, try to make things as universally accessible to the broadest audience possible. And, you know, we have found over time that making accommodations oftentimes turns into benefits for everyone.
Yeah, noise canceling headsets, if you give them to everybody and not just the individual who asks, you might see productivity go up because of the lack of background noise, and you can really focus on what you're doing.
Absolutely.
No, very, very, very cool. And So we've talked a lot about types of accommodations and things like that. What if somebody doesn't speak English? I mean, if English isn't their primary language, or they're just not fluent, does JAN have resources for non-English speakers? Or
we do for those who speak Spanish. So we have certainly translated a lot of our resources into Spanish. We used to do that quite a lot. Now, you even can go to the JAN site, and we have a widget that allows you to translate the entire site.
Wow.
So if you're wanting to get on there, just at the top of the homepage, there is a little widget there where you can switch to Spanish language. So currently, we don't have any of our resources in other types of languages, but Spanish is an option.
Well, and Google might be able to do it nowadays,
yes.
or something, where there's
absolutely
so much Google Translate and these other tools out there. Really, really incredible.
Yeah.
And you have a YouTube channel too, right? So what kind of things can people find on your YouTube channel?
Oh, we have so much information there. I'm glad you asked that question. we have over time curated various video resources there. In particular, so JAN has a monthly webcast series that focuses on various accommodation and ADA topics. It's a free series that anyone can register for. And what we do then is we add those webcasts to our YouTube channel, and they're great training tools. They're great tools just to learn, frankly, but you know, for employers particularly who are looking for training tools, we certainly have those available. We have over time created role play videos as well that focus on various accommodation and ADA topics that sort of illustrate situations, often situations that went wrong at first and then, you know, how they improved over the course of the video. So those are great learning and training tools. We also have some videos we've created around certain types of accommodations. So equipment, for example, and how it's been used as an accommodation to explain the type of equipment and its purpose as an accommodation. So you'll find a whole bunch of videos that I think can be real helpful to people.
I love that. I'm going to have to check that out in more detail because I like that kind of stuff. I like seeing how you can take something and modify it, or, you know, maybe you wouldn't ordinarily think of it as an in air quotes accommodation, but, mm-hmm. you know, absolutely you can use it. And mm-hmm. then, you know, where another place my mind goes is hopefully there are some of the listeners out there, even if they don't own their own company or whatever, they're going to have upward mobility. So maybe yeah. they're working in a place right now where it's just the two of them or whatever. But eventually, if this is their desire, maybe they move into a management role with a larger company. Doing the background now could save a faux pas later, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, learning now and you know, maybe even becoming a resource within your company, saying, oh, let me be your go-to for this kind of thing. You know, I'll be happy to be the go-between, if you will, with JAN. Because again, it goes back to people are busy and, oh, I don't have time for that. And, you know, but there's always one or two people in the organization where they're just like, how did they do all of this? Right? I mean, am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Yeah, absolutely. I think you make a good point there too. As an individual, it is so important to educate yourself, to gather information, to be a resource. You know, so the more you can do to gather information, to become educated on various accommodation issues and topics, you could be a tool that's useful in your place of employment that might help to educate other people or help them advocate for themselves even. So yeah, absolutely.
And on the flip side of that, if you're more risk averse, and that's what motivates you, this could be what keeps you from putting your foot in your mouth if you're advocating for your son or daughter or
sure.
your child and just saying before you go off the deep end on a company because you think they're violating ADA.
Yeah.
Maybe make sure you're really aware of what the requirements are. Or,
yeah, you know. I'm glad you mentioned that, Eric, because you know, obviously, as a parent, you know, you want to do everything you can to ensure that your child has the best opportunities, to make sure that they're not being discriminated against, to make sure that their rights are afforded to them. You know, a lot of times what happens is parents may be used to advocating for their child in the educational system. And it's a little bit different when we get into the world of work, right? You have that transition and things change. And they have to become, the individual has to become an advocate for themselves. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, the parent can't still be there supporting them. And oftentimes they might still need to advocate depending on the circumstances. But we have to realize that the rules in employment are a little different than they are in the educational context. So the best thing I think that you can do as a parent is to make sure that you are understanding what the ADA says as it relates to employment, what's required in terms of disability disclosure or how to request an accommodation, and to support your child in the process of doing that, helping them advocate for themselves, make accommodation requests on their own, lead them to the resources and understand, you know, read them with them so that you're both understanding what it means to make a request for accommodation at work, to disclose your disability at work. You know, sometimes there's sort of a misunderstanding that a person doesn't need to share their disability-related information in the workplace, and they want to, you know, not share any of that, but they want to ask for something that they might be entitled to under the federal law. But there is some disclosure that's necessary in order to ensure that you can receive an accommodation, because the employer has a right to ask some questions. They have a right to understand that you can ask for a change at work due to your disability. So we do talk a lot about disclosure related issues for, you know, individuals who are transitioning from school to work, and some resources that they and or their parents or other advocates might need. And we do, to that end, on the JAN website at askjan.org, we have two sections of the site, one devoted to employers and another devoted to individuals. So on the individuals page, we've curated a lot of resources there that are more specific to what an individual might need to become familiar with as part of the accommodation process. So I would encourage listeners to certainly check that out.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't exaggerating when I said I could spend all day on that website. You guys have so much material.
It's a lot.
I mean, and it's helpful to know, kind of narrow your focus with what you're going there for. And I think I like that's why you said the topic section, because that really, if you're not really sure where to start, you can just, I would imagine, you can go to the topic section, say disclosure or yes, you know, and it'll give you a good starting point.
Exactly. And that is one of those topics there where, you know, if it's in alphabetical order. So when you go to the topic of disclosure, we have some information about that topic. And all the pages are set up a little differently. On that page, you'll find a lot of information as it pertains to the ADA, because it's really important to understand what the disclosure, I don't want to say rules, but, you know, what it means to disclose, how to disclose, when to disclose, you know, those types of things. But also at the bottom of a lot of the pages, you'll find additional resources. So we might lay out some general information, and then at the bottom, you'll see a lot of resources that we've written or resources from other entities like the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, for example. We have a lot of enforcement-related resources, guidances, fact sheets, things like that. They're the agency that enforces the ADA, and they produce a lot of really great information that we draw from. So I would say if people do use the A to Z and they do look for information, make sure you check the whole page out, because you'll find more information at the bottom. Also with that A to Z too, since you mentioned the topic, but, you know, for those people who have a particular type of disability, you can search on disability.
Keep in mind,
it's not comprehensive, and you know, we add to that list of disabilities based on, you know, we're getting a lot of context on, about this particular type of impairment or this type of medical condition. So we add information, you know, based on that. It's not a comprehensive list, and it's also not an indicator of what might be an ADA disability. So don't look at the list that way. Just look at it as it's a curated list of resources based on commonly requested, you know, information for common disabilities that come up.
That's incredible, Tracy. Was there something that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you? I mean, we've gone like all over the place with and I hope the listeners are getting an idea for just how expansive JAN's website is. I mean, I can't put into words how much information you can get from their website.
It's really great. I think people can really take advantage of it. I think one other thing I can think of, you know, when we talked before about what we might talk about today, you know, one of the misunderstandings I think that comes up as it relates to accommodation is the idea that accommodations are costly or difficult to provide. And I know we've talked a little bit about common accommodations and that kind of thing, but I think it's important for people to realize that oftentimes accommodations are no cost or low cost. So, I think that's an important message. You know, it's not hard oftentimes to provide accommodations. And there are common changes that are made that really, you know, For employers are not a big deal. For individuals, I tell people, don't be afraid to ask for what you need. Don't worry about what you think it might cost or what sort of impact it's going to have. You know, we talked about coming up with various ideas and throwing those out there, but don't put too much thought into, well, you know, is this going to be something the employer can or can't provide? You just never know. You know, an employer might be open to providing whatever it is you're asking for. So ultimately, they may not be costly. They oftentimes don't cost anything at all. And they may be simple to provide in a lot of situations. So just kind of want to debunk that misunderstanding a little bit.
Thank you for that. Thank you. And when people reach out to, is the only way to get information by going to the website, or can they talk? I think you mentioned they could talk to a consultant or they could talk to an expert.
Yes. So I would say start with the website, just simply because there's a lot of information there. It gives you an idea of maybe how to start your journey and also ultimately how to communicate with us about what your needs are. For individuals, I would say the best thing to do is to look at the individuals section of the site and send us an email. So send us an email, explain to us what your situation is, ask your direct questions. We don't necessarily need the, you know, year's worth of history about a situation, but we need to understand what's your current situation. What are you going through right now? And what's your question? We do have a toll-free number option where people can certainly call there. For a lot of employers, that's generally how we're assisting them. It might be through the toll-free line, or we have a live chat also available on our website. So if you go to the askjan.org site, which is available 24/7, of course, and you can do that and look for how to contact us and figure out the best method for you.
Very cool. And again, I think it's going to give you a better experience if you do some homework before you actually try to talk to somebody.
I agree.
That's just in general, no matter where you are in life, if you can arm yourself with some information before you go talking to somebody, you're going to have a better outcome.
I agree. That's definitely a good approach.
Awesome. So you've mentioned the website several times, askjan.org, askjan.org. And then you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you have is the YouTube channel at Ask Jan, or what's, if you don't know, I'm going to include a link in the show notes anyway. So,
okay, that'd be great. Let me pull it up really quickly, because, you know, it's that kind of thing where you don't know your own phone number or your own email because you don't use it.
Yep. And I didn't prep you ahead of time, so that's my fault.
No, it is. It's just at Jan Information, as it looks like.
And you should be able to get there from the website too. I'm sure there's
absolutely
a little YouTube link and...
At the bottom of our site, you can go directly to our social media and our YouTube page. So you can just click on it right there. It makes it real easy. And of course, you could just search. That's real. Just search Job Accommodation Network. That makes it easy too. So yeah, on YouTube, we're just Job Accommodation Network.
So what I would encourage people to do would be sign up for the monthly webcast series, which is free. And it's monthly, so you're not going to be getting inundated every week with stuff.
Correct. You know, and we don't send a bunch of information out prior to a couple of days before the webcast. We'll send you an email just as a reminder.
And then if they have questions, they can search, you know, go on the website, search through, even if they're just curious. I mean, now's the time to arm yourself before something comes up.
Yeah.
No, this has been awesome, Tracy. Thank you for your time. This has been really cool.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to share some information about Jan.
Thank you for listening to the ABC's Disability Podcast interview with Tracy DeFreitas and Job Accommodation Network. We covered a lot in this episode. Some of the things I hope you're taking away would be, how do you introduce your employer to Jan if you think there could be some help understanding accommodations in the ADA? What are some of the typical misunderstandings when it comes to accommodations in the ADA? And why employers don't necessarily have to worry that an accommodation is going to be too expensive or too hard to implement. Tracy did a fantastic job, I feel, of outlining what is available to employers. And if nothing else, go to the Job Accommodation Network website, look under the A to Z search under topics and find your topic, find your disability. Find the problem you're facing, type it in, see what questions they have, see what resources they have for your questions. If you're an employer, call the toll-free line, do the live chat. If you're an individual, send an email, be very direct with your question. But try to find the answer on the website first. Till next time, thanks for listening.